Coming up on Central Standard, the history of the game of insults called the Dozens, a tradition of verbal combat going all the way back before hip-hop. A tradition that includes a good share of yo mama jokes.
Your mama's so stupid, she uses speed stick to get to work faster. I gotta go.
Wow.
Your mom is so fat, all her relationships are long distance.
What did he just say?
Your mama's so stupid. She went to the dentist talking about I need a Bluetooth.
His mama's so fat, she can hear bacon cooking in Canada. Your mama's so old, her memory in black and white.
Your mama's so ugly. Hello Kitty said goodbye.
Oh, snap. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and we've got more where that came from on today's Central Standard, following this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. There are very few things that inspire both outrageous laughter and potential violence like the game of the Dozens. It's a game where the object of the game is to best one's opponent with insults ranging from clothing to physical stature and appearance. And of course, the requisite yo mama jokes. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Our guest is Elijah Wald, author of the book The Dozens, A History of Rap's Mama. It's all about the history of interactive joke telling and its whimsical and not so whimsical consequences. Welcome to the show, Elijah.
Thanks a lot for having me on.
Now, a lot of people know what the Dozens are, but define the Dozens for our listeners who may not know what it is.
Oh, boy. There are a lot of different ways to do it, but I guess the simple way is think of it as a verbal duel, usually just between two guys. Usually they're guys, sometimes women. And it's sort of a way that they're fighting with each other with their mouths, but also entertaining the other people. I mean, I think it's as much a way of showing off for the people who are watching as a way of combating with the other person. And, yeah, a lot of it about parents. It really depends. You know, some neighborhoods, if you didn't talk about someone's mama, it wasn't the Dozens. Some neighborhoods, sometimes it wasn't the Dozens unless it rhymed, which is an immediate connection to rap battling.
Well, you discovered two interesting things in this book. One was that there is no discernible origin for why they call it the Dozens. Tell us about that.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people have come up with a lot of different answers. One of the answers, and actually I just did a call-in show in New York, and somebody said he grew up in New Jersey, and when they played the Dozens, you actually used to have 12 insults.
Right.
And if you didn't have 12 insults, it didn't count as the Dozens. But most neighborhoods didn't do it that way. But that's one of the answers. One of the answers is, actually there was a book called The Black Book that Toni Morrison edited, where they said that the Dozens came from slave markets, that slaves who were in really bad shape, like who were sick, would be sold in group lots of a dozen. So to be put in the Dozens was to be in really bad shape, and that it came out of that. But there, in my book, I have 9 different explanations people have given, and the bottom line is we don't know.
So this is the ultimate in folklore, and you discovered that it goes back even further than that slave explanation to Africa.
Oh, it goes back very, very much in African culture. I mean, the oldest example I have in the book of something related to the Dozens is actually an Egyptian hieroglyphic from 725 BC, where somebody wrote, not actually your mother, your wife, may your wife copulate with a donkey.
Wow.
So, I mean, this stuff goes back, you know, that's the oldest written one I could find, but I figure this stuff goes back as far as people go back.
Or something like, your mom is so stupid, she thought a sundial was a way to call the sun.
For example. Yeah.
Now, tell the truth, did you write this book because somebody talked about your mama? Is that what made you want to write this book?
That wasn't what started it, but I'm not going to say it never happened.
Right. You had written previous books on the blues and on rural music history and oral history and folklore. And what led you to explore the Dozens further?
Well, what happened was, I mean, I was always interested in blues and I played blues. And when rap came along, it seemed to me just like a modern part of that same tradition. And it really was bothering me that a lot of my friends who were into blues like hated rap and were treating it like something completely different. So a couple of years ago, I started wanting to do a book that would just connect the tradition of blues with the tradition of rap. And I was just going along researching that and getting more and more interested. And chapter four was going to be about the Dozens. And when I started researching it, I just hit so much stuff that I realized that this needed to be its own book.
So what was the reaction of people during your preparation to explore something so intrinsically black as a white man exploring something about the Dozens, which is based on insults? How did that,
That's really funny. Yeah, because, you know, when I started writing about blues, there was a moment where I sort of wondered. But the fact is, you know, I'm completely open about the fact that I'm a white guy. I'm coming at this from outside. And I'm respectful of the fact that I'm coming at it from outside, and I'm trying to learn about it. I'm not claiming that I'm an expert. And honestly, you know, a lot of white people ask me, you know, aren't you nervous about talking about black culture when you're a white guy? Black people never ask me that. I mean, black people talk about white culture all the time. I mean, you know, we're not stupid. We're all paying attention to each other.
They sure do. They sure do. How did you find the African-American Dozens experience different from how you traded insults with other kids growing up?
Much more creative.
Much more creative.
And that, yeah. No, I mean, that's the thing that, people have always said about the Dozens. I mean, the Dozens is leading into something like rap. And, you know, I listen to, like, white kids trade your mama jokes. First of all, they put on black accents when they do it. So right up front, they're admitting it isn't their thing. And second of all, they just tend to say things they've learned out of books or heard on television. Whereas the whole point of the Dozens is somebody says something and you try to make up something that bounces off what they said and takes it to another level. It's a creative process. It's like a rap battle.
It's much more intrinsic and much more emphatic if you say, yo mama, your mother really doesn't work in these sort of situations.
You know, that's actually really interesting because that depends a lot on neighborhoods. And it was something actually I didn't get into the book because I hadn't been paying enough attention. But I was recently taking a class in sociolinguistics and actually started paying attention. And like there's this whole thing in St. Louis that was recorded, this Dozens match in the early 60s, long Dozens match between two black teenagers. But one of them also was interviewed for hours. And I looked and all through the Dozens match, he says, your mama. And all through the interview, he talks about his mother and other people's mothers. So, yeah, exactly what you said. Like, your mama is the joke. Your mother is the person.
You tap on an interesting thing. The focus on one's mother is an interesting and very insulting aspect, but it's central to the Dozens. What did you find about how
that
came about?
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting on a lot of levels. One of the things I found was that insulting people's mothers, it isn't in every tradition. Like, European tradition doesn't go in for that, but it's all over the world. Chinese tradition, Fiji, all over Africa, Turkey. Mothers are very rarely fathers. It's mostly mothers. That's like the way you really get at somebody. But the other thing I found, particularly in African tradition, is that it also is a ceremonial thing, that you find circumcision ceremonies where part of the circumcision ceremony is all the boys singing songs about, I can't say it on the air, but, you know, have intimate relations with your mother, is a song that they sing, and it's a way of passing into manhood. It's like cutting yourself off from being the little kid with your mother to this new world. So it goes very deep.
A new world indeed. There's a lot of stuff that's very raunchy in your book that you can't necessarily say on air, but it's a rite of passage because it's mainly among young men.
Yeah, it's a rite of passage, both because, you know, there's that thing about your mother, but also it's just the rite of passage of growing up to be talking about this stuff that, and knowing about this stuff. I mean, it's about sex, but I think, you know, one thing I learned about the Dozens that kind of surprised me is it's very much a teenage thing, that wherever I looked, it's fairly rare for grown-up men to go in for it the same way. And I think it is at that moment where sex is something that's sort of fascinating and scary and not yet something that's normal.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Our guest is Elijah Wald, author of the book The Dozens, A History of Rap's Mama. It's all about the history of interactive joke telling and its funny and not so funny consequences. Kansas City, what are your favorite Yo Mama jokes? This is a rare opportunity to get in on the Dozens game, slip in the dozens, as they say. And we remind you to keep it clean when you call up 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write in your jokes of your youth to centralstandard@kcur.org. Facebook is also an option. And at KCURCST is our Twitter handle to tweet your favorite jokes. But remember to keep it clean. We're taking a risk here putting out this filler, but keep it clean. Elijah Wald, talk about the competitive aspects of The Dozen and the crowd aspects of The Dozen. As an author, you cite an author in your book that describes it as almost a war between two nations. Talk about that.
Yeah, no, that's very much, you know, I mean, it's a way of sort of proving yourself against somebody without anybody necessarily getting hurt, though sometimes that happens too. I mean, there's this great quote from Langston Hughes talking about when he was growing up at the local barber shop. He says the men would play the dozens for hours. And they said normally it was just good fun, though sometimes it would turn into a fight and they'd have to go outside. But then he said, but of course a fight was good fun too. And that's one. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that I had to be reminded of, that, you know, I think people, grown-ups looking at this, they see this real difference between verbal fighting and physical fighting. But, of course, for kids, that isn't necessarily all that different. And in both ones, it's a way of showing off for other kids. I mean, The Dozens is so much not just a way of beating your opponent, you one-on-one, as a way of having everybody remember that you were the smartest person in the room.
On Twitter, at Urban Harpenbowl writes, your mama's so fat, she wears a VCR like a beeper. That's an interesting one. It kind of dates him. He brings up the VCR, a VCR and beeper. So that's interesting in and of itself and funny in and of itself. Tell us about how the insult game, The Dozens, played out in early blues songs.
Well, that's really interesting because, I mean, the first definition ever written of The Dozens that you can find in history, slipping you in the dozens means to talk about your family folks and talking about your parents ain't jokes,
right,
is in a song. That's before anyone mentioned it in print in, you know, a study or a folklorist or anything else. That was a hit song called Don't Slip Me in the Dozens, Please, by a black songwriter in Chicago named Chris Smith. And same way, in the blues, a guy named Speckled Red had this huge hit called The Dirty Dozen in 1929 that was covered by everybody. I mean, I'm talking to people here in Kansas City. Count Basie covered The Dirty Dozen. In fact, Lead Belly did a song about The Dirty Dozen that's in Kansas City, that's talking about people in Kansas City, where he talked about your mama, who was a goddamn pity.
And it rhymes with Kansas City.
And it rhymes with Kansas City. So it became, after Speckled Red hit, everybody started doing these dozen songs in what they used to call race records, what we now call blues records. But the funny thing to me was finding out that Speckled Red's hit was this completely censored version of the way he really used to sing this song. He recorded it for a small group of jazz fans in St. Louis in the 1950s, the way he used to sing it in the barrel houses in Mississippi and in Detroit and in Memphis. And the language, there's nothing in gangster rap that is rawer than the language he was using in the 1920s.
Yeah, it's interesting what you cite about Speckled Red in that book and him coming out with Dirty Dozens 2, which sort of takes that tradition along. But let's go back before blues, the antecedent to blues, which is the work song era. People like Edwin Buster Pickens and his role in passing time at the work camps, the role of The Dozens at the work camps that led into blues.
Sure. That's a really interesting thing to me, because one of the things that fascinated me connecting blues and rap is a lot of people talk about, you know, yeah, there were dirty blues, but it didn't used to use the sort of brutal language they use in rap today. And one of the things that fascinated me is, yeah, it sure did. It's just they couldn't put it on records back then. And Buster Pickens, the guy you were talking about, he was a piano player in what they used to call the barrel houses in the camps along the Mississippi River in the levee camps. And he says, yeah, all the songs they used to sing, they used to start up with the dozens. And that was just how you would open up the evening. And it was using the language we now think of as the language that we didn't get in popular culture, we didn't get in music until rap. It was using all those words that I can't quote for you right here on the air. And that was normal because, you know, if you think about it, I mean, if all you're playing for are the guys working the levee camps and the women who are there to make their money from the guys working the levee camps, those people weren't policing their language.
They weren't at all.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was this whole world where people used the same language they use on the street today, and the singers sang their songs in that same language. And you find those things. Actually, there was a woman, Ali Colleen Neff, was just doing research on rappers in the Mississippi Delta. And one of the things that she was finding was that young rappers today are still using dozens lines that she can find in folklore books from the 1930s, and they think this is brand new because it's so filthy and so nasty. And she knows their grandparents were doing this, but their grandparents aren't telling them.
And this goes back really far, across generations, sort of intrinsically flowing through everybody's consciousness, including Tracy Quinn of Kansas City, Missouri, who writes in and say, your mom is so old, her Social Security number is 1. That's a really good one.
Yeah.
That's a really good one. You said this dozens game inspired people such as folk writer Zora Neale Hurston and the poet Nikki Giovanni, mainly the purview of young men. But tell us about Zora Neale Hurston and Nikki Giovanni's takes on the dozens, because it's part of the whole community.
Yeah, no, that was, you know, one of the things that's always tricky, especially in dirty folklore, is that, like, all the folklorists tended to be men. And so when they say men are the only people who did this, like, maybe men are the only people who were talking to male folklorists, and maybe the women weren't telling them. So, yeah, Nikki Giovanni tells this story of her and her sister when they were little kids getting in this dozens fight with the other girls in the neighborhood. And the other girls start off on their mama, and her sister comes back with this line that I love because it like took me a moment to go, like, what? She says, your mama's such a hoe that she visited a farm and they dug a whole field with her before they figured out it was her.
Wow. And that, that's pretty intricate and clever and a double entendre as well.
And she's saying this is like her sister when her sister was like 6 years old and Nikki Giovanni was 5. And so first of all, there's a 6-year-old doing that. Second of all, there's this little 5-year-old who remembers this the rest of her life because it makes such an impression on her. And Zora Neale Hurston loved this kind of stuff. I mean, you get into Zora Neale Hurston's books. And
very comedic approach, Zora Neale Hurston's books.
Yeah, and she took great pride in the fact that Southern people, and she always insisted that it was Southern people, be they black or white, just had this love of language. They loved just, you know, they wouldn't just insult you by just saying something normal. They loved these intricate, fancy things that showed how well they could use the language. And that's something I think it's much stronger in the black culture than the white culture, but Southern culture than Northern culture both ways.
Something that makes the oral tradition collective, as it were.
Yeah.
Because not only can you tell the story of what happened at the dozens match, but you can retell the jokes, and so it circulates like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it also connects out, you know, it connects to music at every level. I mean, I think, you know, when you think about Kansas City, you know, Kansas City was where a lot of, like, the North met the South. I mean, when Count Basie came out there from New Jersey, he knew how to play, like, a more refined kind of dance music. But he said he first heard the blues when he got to Kansas City. And it's that meeting place. I mean, Kansas City was where these things came together. And the dozens work the same way. I mean, it has that sort of deep bluesy feel of something that's coming up from down south, but it also has that intricacy to it.
So talk about North versus South as the dozens character, the character of the dozens, the style of playing the dozens begins to diverge from South to North. You have people coming up from the Great Migration. It's a rural tradition starting in blues, starting on the stoops and steps down south. But then it gets to places like Chicago, places like Kansas City, places like Detroit, northern
right.
places, New York. How does it
Absolutely.
Diverge?
Just like the music, there's this mix of, like, you want to have that connection with down home, but at the same time, you're in the city, you know your way around the city, and that makes you better than someone who just came up from the country. So, I mean, for example, Amiri Baraka, Leroy Jones, the poet, talks about how he started out playing the dozens, and this was in New Jersey. And, you know, he's going into things like, your mama's so country, she just come up from Mississippi playing a damn harmonica.
That's funny. Wow. Sergio writes in, your mama's so fat that she needs her own zip code. So, obviously, this is something that is very long-lasting. We're going to go to the phones right now. Joe Louise Maddox, a resident historian and archivist here in Kansas City. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Say, my question is there a great difference between jokes like Shine and the Signifying Monkey and the Dozens? I grew up in southeast Missouri, cotton picking country, and never was able to master the Dozens when we were chopping cotton, so I kind of stayed away from it. But I did hear those jokes about, Shine, the Titanic, and the Signifying Monkey.
Talk about that.
Yeah.
The Signifying Monkey and folklore, Tar Baby, things such of that nature. The correlation or the difference or the comparing and contrasting the Dozens versus folklore. Talk about that.
Sure. Well, particularly if you're getting into things like Shine and the Titanic and Signifying Monkey, one of the things is the Dozens is sort of a training ground. The Dozens, it used to be a lot of rhymes, just like those things are rhymed. And the Dozens were just like little kids are learning a few little rhymes, like they're learning schoolyard games, they're learning the Dozens. And then as they grow up, some people learn these long, intricate show pieces like Shine and the Titanic. The Signifying Monkey, of course, is really interesting because it's kind of a poem about a Dozens match. And some versions, like Rudy Ray Moore, recorded Dolomite. A lot of people may know him better as Dolomite than as Rudy Ray Moore.
Yeah, way down in the jungle deep.
Exactly, way down in the jungle. And that one, the Signifying Monkey, Rudy Ray Moore actually turns that into this long Dozens match. I mean, he has like a row of 20 or 25 Dozens insults that the monkey is saying to the lion, that the elephant said this about the lion's mama and the lion's relatives. And those, you know, that's a space where if you were doing the Signifying Monkey and you started doing that in a barroom or like your friend was saying in the fields, that would be something where everybody else might start chipping in with their favorite rhymes. And that's a moment where like the Dozens, which you've all been doing, intersects and you can stick all these Dozens lines into the long poem. But the long poem is a more mature form. It's something that a grown-up man might do, whereas the Dozens is more maybe what you did when you were kids.
Very good question, Joe Louise Maddox. Thank you for calling in. We're on with Elijah Wald. He is the author of the book, The Dozens, A History of Rap's Mama. It's about the story of folklore and interactive insults, joke-telling, rhyme-based storytelling that's based in insults, where it leads to whimsical and not-so-whimsical consequences. Melissa in Overland Park writes in to say the first time she heard the term Dozens was on the sitcom Good Times. She was in junior high at the time, and now she says her daughter has learned it at junior high and loves doing it. Does the author, meaning Elijah Wald, have anything to say about how sitcoms influenced or perpetuated the game? Now, I'll sort of expound on that question.
Yeah,
the legendary comedian Red Fox, who later gained wider fame on Sanford and Son for his snaps on Aunt Esther, is well known for the Dozens routines and even precedes Good Times, which was produced by Norman Lear, who also produced Sanford and Son. Tell us about the role of the Dozens in black comedy.
Well, that's real interesting. Red Fox himself, apparently, I actually found a little memory of him from someone who was in high school with him, and they say that's completely where Red Fox came out of, that he was the toughest Dozens player in the neighborhood and was doing, this guy says, doing stuff funnier than he ever did on stage. Now, a funny thing, you just mentioned Aunt Esther, and that's LaWanda Page. And she did the filthiest records ever made. She did records that make Red Fox sound clean.
Wow.
I mean, her records are amazing. And she gets into all these insults, too. I mean, it's very much, it was a training ground for comedians. Dick Gregory talked about this. Richard Pryor talked about this. Not just black comedians. George Carlin says that the way he learned to be a comedian, the way he learned to be fast, was playing the dozens on the street in an Irish neighborhood in New York. So it's completely a training ground for that.
You but mentioned that briefly, too. Irish aspect.
Absolutely. Immigrant neighborhoods. I mean, Jewish kids, Irish kids, Italian kids pick this up, too. But what your caller was saying is also very true. I mean, I think for a lot of people, particularly younger people, they first came across the dozens on television, something like Good Times or In Living Color. Used to do these game shows where it would be like Wheel of Dozens instead of Wheel of Fortune, with Jamie Foxx always winning with his Your Mama jokes. So, yeah, it very much gets carried on that way. And nowadays, YouTube. I mean, I think my nephews, they learned about the dozens on YouTube.
And we have a bunch of YouTube videos that we found telling Your Mama jokes, kids of all racial makeups and ethnicities telling Your Mama jokes all over YouTube. So it's very permeated in our culture now. Our guest is Elijah Wald, author of the book The Dozens, A History of Rap's Mama. It's all about the history of interactive joke telling and its whimsical and not so whimsical consequences. Speaking of which, Kansas City, what are your favorite Yo Mama jokes? This is a rare opportunity to get in on the game of the dozens, and we remind you to keep it clean. Sanitize it when you call in at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write in your jokes of your youth, or maybe of now, to centralstandard@kcur.org. Facebook is also an option. At KCURCST is our Twitter handle to tweet your favorite jokes. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, more about the dozens and about how your mom is so stupid she thought Taco Bell was a Mexican phone company. Oh, snap. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. If you're checking out the astrological event of the Venus transit tonight, be sure to keep your eyes peeled and protected, but also remember your questions. We'll be speaking with a couple of astronomers on tomorrow's show about the celestial event. And we have more on our website at kcur.org. But meanwhile, back to your mama. Our guest is Elijah Wald, author of the book, The Dozens, A History of Rap's Mama. It's all about the history of interactive joke telling and its whimsical and not so whimsical consequences. We're talking about playing the dozens, most commonly known as the jokes that begin with the phrase, your mama slipping you in the dozen means to talk about your family folks, and talking about your parents ain't jokes. That's from the opening verse of a 1921 pop song called Don't Slip Me in the Dozens. It appears in Mr. Wald's books. Kansas City, what are your favorite Yo Mama jokes? This is a rare opportunity to get in on the Dozens games, and we remind you to keep it clean. Call in at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write in at centralstandard@kcur.org. Facebook and Twitter are also options. Our handle at Twitter is at KCURCST. On Twitter, Jeff tweets, Your mama's so old that she sat next to Moses in homeroom. Wow. That makes her really, really old. How does this dozens culture make for a perfect jump off point in hip hop and rap? Where does the aspect of rhyme come in, Elijah?
Well, rhyming came in some of the earliest dozens we've ever heard of. People were rhyming already back in the 1890s.
Right.
About each other's mothers. And it may go back even further than that. And leading into rap, I mean, right, you know, you think of Rapper's Delight. A lot of that is already just, you know, two guys fighting with each other with their mouths. It's just the dozens match put in with musical backing. So, you know, the connection is from the very beginning. And the other thing is it goes right into today. I mean, you go out to rap battles. I was in Boston, where I'm from. I was in Dorchester listening to these guys. And this guy named Johnny Boston just completely killed this other guy in a rap battle. And I went up to him afterwards and, you know, was just saying, you know, he was great. And he said, you know, it's funny, I've never battled before. And I couldn't believe, you know, I was like, so how could you do that? He said, oh, well, you know, I grew up capping on other kids and I could freestyle, so I just put them together. And there it was, like the whole idea of my book that, you know, the dozens is just leading straight into this.
Do you remember one of the more poignant things that Johnny Boston said that made you go, whoa?
I don't think he said anything I could say on the air.
Well, we'll see what Murray has to say on the air. Mary in KC, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, Javelani. I was just you guys were talking about the whole rap thing, and I was it was reminding me of 8 Mile, the movie with Eminem, when they did the rap battles, and that was just basically the dozens. And I remember watching that with my sons, and we got into a conversation about what the dozens were, and that's when I began to explain to them that this is just the dozens, what we did when we were kids, basically, to music. And so I just wanted to make that point and bring that up.
Thank you very much, Mary, for that point. I've sat with my grandfather and grandmother on occasions, too, and they say that ain't nothing but the dozens. Talk about that.
Well, you know, the first thing I should say about that is there are probably people listening to us right now who are thinking, boy, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. He's just a young white guy, and, you know, we could school him on this. And all I can say is if you feel that way, please get in touch with me and tell me where I've got it wrong. Because, like, I wrote this book as a way of beginning a conversation. Because the way this stuff gets talked about, like this radio show, I mean, you know, we're saying please call in but keep it clean. And it's been that way for 100 years. And one of the things that happens is we don't really know all that much about how people talk because we keep telling them to keep it clean whenever it's in public. So, I mean, for me, a big part of this book was just sort of saying maybe rap has made this opening in our society now where we can start talking honestly about what it was like 50 years ago, but we weren't telling anybody about back then.
Well, people are calling in, telling us their favorite Your Mama jokes. April writes in, your mama's so poor, someone threw a cigarette in her yard, and she said, clap your hands, stomp your feet, thank the Lord, we got heat. She says she'll never forget that one. From fourth grade, April writing in about that. Wow, cigarette, we got heat, that's crazy. On Twitter, Gregory writes, your mama's so dumb, she drank Kool-Aid to get a Bluetooth.
you got
to pause on that little technological allusion to that. Talk about some of these insults in your book that are pretty raunchy. Tell us about some of the reactions and criticisms to playing the game of the dozens themselves. The criticism of the criticism, so to speak.
Absolutely. No, I mean, that's something that you brought up, you know, when you're announcing it, that, you know, funny and sometimes not so funny. I mean, I got an email from a friend of mine who he works a lot on gospel music. And he was saying, you know, you talk a lot about how creative this was, how it was a way, you know, for male bonding among, you know, for kids to sort of also show off for each other. But, you know, you really need to emphasize that a lot of people got hurt. And he says, you know, a lot of the people he deals with in the gospel scene, first of all, there are a lot of people, and I hope nobody's offended by my saying this, but anyone who's been in church knows I'm not lying. There are a lot of men in the gospel world, piano players, choir directors, whose sexuality is not like super macho and who suffered from people playing the dozens on them all through their childhood and who really got hurt. And he was saying, you know, you got to keep that part of it out front. And that's true, too, that, you know, for a lot of people, this was creative. This was fun. This was funny. But it also is a way to hurt people, and it is something that led to fights, and it has led to people getting, you know, seriously hurt.
Some people, it helps you develop thick skin, and some people, just like they've never forgotten the first Yo Mama joke that they heard or the best Yo Mama joke that they heard, they have never forgotten a joke that really penetrated through to them and
made them feel
bad.
Right, and there's people who liked, absolutely, and there's people who liked playing, and there's people who wanted to get out of the room when that started. And, you know, those are both, it's like rap. I mean, there are people who love it and there are people who hate it. And fortunately, the world's big enough for all of us.
Well, we're all the way in the room on this. Isaac writes in via centralstandard@kcur.org with another Yo Mama joke. Your mama's so stupid, she got locked in a furniture store and slept on the floor. When did this way of insulting people begin to cross the color line and become acceptable? Did it become more acceptable in the rap era?
Oh, I think completely. It depends what neighborhood. It's actually really interesting because when I start talking about, you know, how this is a black thing, there'll always be some people, like I just did this in New York, and, you know, some white guys will call in from New Jersey saying, look, I'm 60 years old and we were doing this when I was a kid. And then I'll talk to people who were like in the next neighborhood over and they'll say, what? I never heard of that. We never did that. So I think the big change is that now everybody's aware of it. And that was rap. But rap also overflowed because rap, and, you know, I would say, and I think rap has opened up the world so that we can talk about this stuff. You know, you got to remember, people like Chris Rock and Eddie Murphy, we get to hear them talking the way they really talk, partly because rap has made us say, you know, let's grow up and, you know, we might as well record this stuff. And sure, Richard Pryor was recording it before rap, but we are living in, I think, a world where you can talk more honestly about a lot of stuff because of rap.
How and why did hip hop change the stakes in the culture with that, with the teenage culture and the barroom or locker room culture taking center stage with rap battling and the comedy reflecting that as well?
Well, I think one of the big things is that this world that was always out there but was strictly in the bars and the playgrounds and didn't have a way to be sort of marketed and commercialized, rap opened that up. I mean, rap suddenly became a place for someone who couldn't maybe, you know, who didn't have a great voice, but who was really creative and was a creative talker. And they could now put that out there and they can make a career off it. So someone like, I don't know if anybody out there has read like Snoop Dogg's memoir. It's really interesting because he's just a guy who was out on the street, but he could talk well. And suddenly there's this world where he starts out, you know, just the local guys are really into him because he's really funny and he can make up these rhymes. And so he's just like popular at parties. And then somebody tells Dr. Dre about him and suddenly he's a star. And that's a real change.
It emerges out of being able to move the crowd, first of all, because the dozens involves an audience.
Absolutely. It starts out of being able to just move the kid next to you, you know, just saying something that'll crack up the other kid in school and get him in trouble. And, you know, then it gets into something that you do in the schoolyard to make your friends be impressed. And nowadays, somebody is then going to come up and say, hey, you know, I make beats. Why don't you come over to my house and try to do some of this stuff over some beats?
Now, were you familiar with some of the historic hip-hop rap battles? You were a blues man, but when you decided to undertake this, what did you become familiar with about rap battles that made you laugh out loud as you were working on this?
See, I didn't know anything about rap battling. So for me, the thing that was really, for me personally, transformative in this project was it got me out to the clubs. And, you know, it's not so much that I'm white, it's that I'm 50 years old. And I don't know anybody, white or black, who's going out to, like, neighborhood rap clubs in Dorchester. And when I went out there, I was watching these battles and I was thinking, you know, this is more like the stories I hear about what blues clubs used to be like in the 30s or 40s than anything in blues now. Because, I mean, you guys, you know, everybody listening knows, you go to a blues club these days, it's not a down and dirty kind of club. Maybe it is in Kansas City, but in Boston, blues is, you know, older people go there, a lot of white people go there, and it's more respectable. And going to the rap clubs, it was like, you know, this is how blues used to be. You know, it used to be street culture.
And this culture is reaching Twitter with us today, as Jeff on Twitter is on a roll. He said, your mama's armpits are so hairy, looks like she has buckwheat in a headlock.
In a headlock.
Yeah. That's a very popular one. Gabby tweets, your mama's so old, I told her to ask her age, and what did she do? She died. Wow. Wow. Pretty heavy. Let's go to Rick in Wyandotte. Welcome to Central Standard, Rick.
Hey, what's up, man? This is a good show.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I got one of them your mama jokes,
you
man.
You got one?
I got one.
Hit us with it.
Okay. Listen to this. It says, your mama's so stupid, man. She's such a mess. She got locked in the grocery store last night and about starved to death.
There's an example of one that rhymes. Talk about that rhyming aspect once again for some of the people who may just be tuning in saying, oh, my God, they're talking about people's mamas.
Well, that's actually something that I was surprised by as well. The first mention of the dozens in print, they're talking about it as already this thing where people are rhyming on folks. And they used to do this in black vaudeville back already in the teens.
In the ragtime era.
1913, 1914, there were guys who were making their living in vaudeville by just sort of calling out to somebody in the audience, okay, what's your name? And whatever name they said, the guy would rhyme on it. And so that rhyming thing, that became huge, of course, in the 1930s and the 1940s with jive talk, you know, with people being able to rhyme on stuff. And that's when you start getting rhyming preachers. But when I started asking people about this, like Lead Belly, the singer, apparently he used to sometimes wake up in the morning and just it would be a day he was going to rhyme. And everything he said that day would be in rhyme. And that's a part of black culture that was always out there. But, you know, rap suddenly, this world of people who could just do that has surfaced. And you've got people, I mean, that was the thing completely blew my mind in battling, that people who were just like off the top of their head, off the dome, just throw out these rhymes. And, you know, what can I say? I'd never seen anybody do that.
This is a rare opportunity in a live radio situation where I get to hear a 50-year-old white man say the term off the dome. That's pretty crazy. That's pretty crazy.
You know, and I always wonder whether I should say that. It's like,
I love it.
You know,
I
figure, you know, I'm going to sound stupid. I might as well not try not to.
Off the dome, by the way, means right off the top of the head, right out of the thought process. Our guest is Elijah Wald, author of the book, The Dozens, A History of Rap's Mama. We're talking about the history of interactive joke telling and its whimsical and not so whimsical consequences. This is where the Yo Mama jokes come from. Kansas City, what are your favorite Yo Mama jokes? It's a rare opportunity to get in on the Dozens game, and we remind you, keep it clean, 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write in at centralstandard@kcur.org. Facebook is also an option, and Twitter is getting pretty crazy at KCURCST, where you can tweet your favorite jokes. This is Central Standard on KCUR 89.3, streaming live on kcur.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Elijah, as rap and the insults evolved and become more nuanced, the Yo Mama approach becomes almost like a default, almost formulaic. How did that happen?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's something actually I was real interested by, because when I started seeing the battling, nobody actually did Yo Mama. I mean, I went to 6 months of battles and only twice heard somebody go there. And so I began asking other people who were spending more time in rap battles all over the country, saying, you know, do people actually do Yo Mama? And I talked to a friend from Los Angeles who actually did a book mostly about rap battling. And he says, you know, people, the same people who were rapping and battling, they'd play the dozens on the street outside. But when they were battling, they wouldn't go to Yo Mama, because the whole point of battling is you're trying to come up with something that sounds new and fresh.
Right.
And Yo Mama is kind of old. So, not meaning your personal mama. I don't know how old your mama is. But your mama jokes sound old. So people don't go there mostly in rap battling, because it just is like, oh, yeah, we've heard that before.
Certainly. We got William and KC. Bring it to us, William.
Your mama is so fat, she used the equator for a belt.
Your mama's so fat, she used the equator for a belt. Mike and Leewood, what you got for us?
Your mama's so fat, she fell in love and broke it.
She fell in love and broke it. That's pretty funny. Now, you mentioned in your book, Elijah Wald, the book, by the way, is called The Dozens, A History of Rap's Mama. It's all about the history of Yo Mama jokes and interactive joke telling and its roots in blues, hip hop, and the work songs all through the 20th century and seeping into the 21st century. You mentioned in your book that the dozens and battling got so popular that it even hit MTV for a short-lived show called Yo Mama. When did the dozens go pop?
Oh, boy. Like I say, it first went pop like in the 1920s. It surfaces every once in a while. I mean, a lot of people out there probably remember Bo Diddley's hit Same Man, which was just Yo Mama over. Actually, he was Your Girlfriend, but same idea. But it really took off in the 1990s. You know, after rap took off, you get In Living Color, Good Times had checked it, and then you get the Yo Mama show on MTV. And that's, I think, when it goes crazy. And then YouTube, of course. You know, it just, everybody started. You go to any place on YouTube where somebody has put up a video of Yo Mama jokes, and you'll find that the comments, there'll be like, you know, 500 people writing in with their favorite jokes. It just, you know, we're now living in this world where everyone can trade this stuff, and not just in the U.S. I mean, one of the funny things that's happened through hip-hop is that they're now having Yo Mama battles, like in France, in French, and they call it Yo Mama battles, though they don't say Yo Mama, they say Ta Mère. So... And that's happening completely in the hip-hop world. It's like in between breakdance competitions. They'll have Yo Mama battles. So it's really taken off now in just because of hip-hop.
Jack in Leawood, welcome to Central Standard.
How are you doing? I had a Yo Mama joke, but I also wanted to make a comment on the international part of
Please
the
do.
Hip-hop. I feel like, you know, artists like Grimes and even Foreign Beggars in the U.K. have really created a very strong and unique underground hip-hop that's really not been seen in any other genre that I think of. I think their lyrics have more significance than most, but I also feel like they have the ability to diss out even the dozens all the way in the UK and even to France. They have some incredible rappers that are just coming up right about now that are touring the U.S. Pretty recently. But my Yo Mama joke was, your mama is so big, fat, and hairy that Bigfoot wants to take a picture of her.
Some of the stuff is just, like, really stupid and very juvenile, and that's what makes it funny, Elijah.
Absolutely. And, I mean, that's one of the things. You know, some people, when I was doing this book, they're like, oh, but that stuff's just stupid. And it's like, you know, a lot of it is stupid, but it's not just stupid. You have all these different pieces to it. And like you say, I mean, you know, stuff that's stupid and funny, that's like, you know, saying, oh, well, that's just music to dance to. That's not serious music. It's like, what's wrong with dancing? What's wrong with laughing? I mean, these, you know, there's a lot of disrespect sometimes for culture that the same person who's disrespecting it, if you actually follow them home, like, they do it too.
Andrew from KC writes, your mama's so stupid, she walked to the bus stop to wait for the Venus transit.
See, that I love, because there's somebody
love.
Who's listening to your show.
He's listening to the show. We're doing a show on the Venus transit tomorrow, and that's a perfect plug for that. Thank you, Andrew from KC. That timeliness, does that matter? Timeliness?
Yeah. No, I mean, that to me is what makes this interesting. And that to me, like I was saying earlier, that's the thing that to me is really different about this as part of African-American culture and the way maybe white kids imitate it is the idea that you just take anything and turn it into the dozens. You make it funny. You make it rhyme rather than just hearing something on television or getting something out of a book and repeating it. So something like what your caller just said, I mean, that's perfect. He's listening to this show. He hears you announce the Venus Trans, and he says, wait a minute, we can use that.
That's very timely, and people are paying attention in particular to this. Your mama's so fat she jumped in the air and got stuck is our latest tweet on at KCRCST, by the way. What does it say about culture in general, the permeation of the dozens? What does it say about culture at large? Today.
Well, it says a couple of things. I mean, one of the things it says, not just today, but going back an awful long way, is, you know, dirty, nasty stuff is fun. And people can try to lock that away in the closet, but it doesn't go anywhere. But one of the cool things about it, and one of the reasons I got into this, is it holds on in a way that nothing else does. And that's one of the things you like. You play kids now. Music from 1915, and they're not interested. I mean, that's old, that's their grandparents' stuff, whatever. But you tell them a filthy Yo Mama insult from 1915, and it's just as fresh today as it was then. And that's something, honestly, that I'm worried about today, whether this stuff turning up on, you know, MTV Yo Mama and that sort of thing is going to just make this thing that has always been alive and always been fresh for kids into something tired and old-fashioned. Because, like, what has kept it alive is the fact that it was forbidden. And so, you know, there's part of me that sort of is glad that we can get out and talk about it now, but there's part of me that thinks, oh, God, you know, is it going to disappear now that it's been out in the big world?
What are some of your favorite Yo Mama jokes, Elijah Wald, or one favorite that you can come right off the top of the dome with?
You know, the ones that blow me away, you know, obviously there are a lot of ones I can't say on the air, but the ones I love are the ones that confuse me. Like this guy, William Labov, he's one of the fathers of sociolinguistics, and he did this whole study of African-American gang teenagers in Harlem in the 1960s. So, you know, these real tough kids, and they're coming up with jokes. The one that stuck with me is, your mama plays dice with the midnight mice.
Wow.
And I love that because it makes no sense whatsoever.
It makes no sense whatsoever, but it's
But it's telling. Surrealism. I mean, it's right. Funny. It's like, your mama plays dice with the midnight mice. That's creative. That's weird.
What rubbed you the wrong way?
You know, you get tired of hearing the same jokes over and over. I mean, I think the thing that ended up rubbing me the wrong way was just, you know, how often the same things come up again and again and again. And you just want to say, you know, that's not funny. We heard that already. But like I say, that always gets balanced by someone up like your caller just now coming up with something completely fresh.
To close it out on Twitter, Grunauer says, I would expect NPR to be doing Yo-Yo Ma jokes, not Yo Mama jokes. So that's a good one to close us out on. Our guest is Elijah Wald, author of the book The Dozens, A History of Rap's Mama, all about the history of interactive joke telling and its funny and not so funny consequences. Thank you so much for coming, Elijah.
Thank you so much for having me.
And tune in tomorrow as we look at a show going on now at the Starlight Theater, opening tonight, called The Heights. And don't you forget, today around 5 p.m., you can see the planet Venus cross the sun. This is your last chance to see the phenomenon until 2117, when it's likely a whole new generation of public radio listeners will rule the planet, and Ira Glass will probably still be around. But watch this with protection. You can seriously damage your eyes. We have an article about this on our website right now at kcur.org. And join us tomorrow as well as two area astronomers answer your questions. That's tomorrow morning at the regular 10 o'clock hour. Our show is produced by Andrea Salenzi with help from Charlie Upchurch. Up to Date is next with Douglas Brinkley and his new book on broadcast legend Walter Cronkite. And that's the way it is. I'm Jabulani LaFall, and this is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.